If we are not talking about the root of the problem, then we're not going to find a successful solution.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Intent. Today, we are joined by Eden Garcia Bayless, who is the CEO of Airport Marina Counseling Services. And she's going to talk about the differences between individual and family therapy and the all-important question of when do we actually need to go to therapy? So welcome, Eden. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm thrilled to be here.
So we're going to start with just a very easy softball question. Can you explain the difference between people engaging in individual therapy versus family therapy?
Absolutely. So the primary difference is scope and focus. In individual therapy, the therapist would focus on one individual's feelings, emotions, behavior, where in family therapy, the therapist really focuses on the unit, patterns within the family, roles, and interactions among family members.
So given that you're focused on the unit, does that mean everybody has to agree to go? It has to be initiated both parties equally? Do you get some people who really want family therapy and others who don't?
So usually it is ideal if the whole family wants to attend family therapy, and there has to be a mutual willingness to participate. However, typically it's usually one family member that initiates therapy, typically a parent. And that's because they're usually feeling the most tension or stress within the family. But usually a therapist can start with one family member and then invite others to attend as they see positive results. So an example could be if a mom really feels like there is problems with one of her children, she can start therapy first and learn how to cope with his feelings or behavior, how to not react, but, you know, respond in an appropriate manner with the goal of then that the family sees, wow, things are changing. Maybe we do really want to come in as a family and see what, you know, kind of positive impact it'll have on us.
It's interesting because when I think about moms starting therapy first, as an example, we know the therapeutic alliance is so important. So is there a conflict if mom's already developed a relationship with a therapist? Let's say she's done 4 or 5 sessions and now she's bringing in spouse or she's bringing in child. Is there a risk that that person says, well, you already know my mom's story. You don't know me, or you're somehow on my mom's side?
So when a therapist decides to engage in family therapy, there is training involved because it is very different than individual therapy. So a therapist learns how to ensure that she is not colluding with one family member over another. And when you bring other people in, it's really building that rapport with those new members. It's helping them ensure and see that everybody is important, that everybody has a chance to speak, that everybody's story is important. And also providing some psychoeducation around that as well with mom, letting her know that it's not, you know, the therapist and her against the family, but rather the importance of the family unit.
That all makes sense. I guess my question would be, do you typically see families who do this because there's been an absolute disaster in the family? There's been some tragic loss. There's been an issue of alcoholism. Or do people go, like, what's the range of reasons somebody might say, I think it's time for us to see a therapist?
There is a variety of ranges. It is typically when there is, you know, a life event that does disrupt kind of the family system. And it does include divorce, addiction, chronic mental illness, or someone recently diagnosed with a mental health disorder, parenting disagreements, blended families, trauma or abuse. But some families just come in because they want to improve communication, because they just want to make sure that every family member is being heard. So it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, this traumatic life event.
What cultural implications are there with family therapy? I'm imagining different people from different backgrounds may have different views on the role of family therapy.
So that's a great question. And one of my favorite answers is it depends. And because it really does depend on the family unit, it really does depend on the culture. It really does depend on what the family is going through. It is important, though, to recognize those cultural differences and then see how you can, you know, work with that. But I do see that, and you probably see this too, that they're, you know, that's really hard to kind of break that barrier. Those cultural nuances, you know, those just cultural implications can have this really long lasting impact. But I think it really does just take one family member to say, we're going to start therapy. I say that family therapy is like a baby mobile. You know, if you think of a baby mobile where you move one piece, the whole mobile changes. It's really that same kind of concept in family therapy. Even if one person is going to therapy and they change their behavior, then they will also kind of motivate and even not even consciously the behavior of others.
Is there a time where it's not appropriate to engage in family therapy?
You know, I think that if people aren't really ready to be really open to therapy, then it's not the right time. If people are still keeping secrets, if they're not really wanting to talk about the issue, then it's not going to be successful. You know, it's really important to be open and honest in order for therapy to work.
Interesting. And I guess with that, the question of how do you deal with resistance? Because I'm guessing it's a bit of a spectrum that, like, not everybody's going to come in with the same level of openness. Certain people may hold some things back, but over time become more open. Is there a process around that? Or are there circumstances where you say, geez, as the referral's coming in, I can see this isn't working, we need to hold off?
So with resistance, you know, resistance is natural. People, of course, are going to be resistant, whether it's for fear, shame. But then it goes back to, if that person is not ready for therapy, then who in the house is? Another example is a mom who may feel like she's doing everything around the house, not getting support from her kids or her husband. And then she lashes out and she decides she's going to go to therapy. She wants everybody to go, but she's the only one who wants to go. The therapist will then work with her on better communication, assertiveness. So now mom may set better boundaries, may ask for more help. That then leads to her not yelling as much. And then the family's going, wow, look, mom's not yelling. We haven't had this outburst. Well, wait a minute. That's because we're helping out around, you know, she's communicating more effectively. She's getting everybody else more engaged. And then they realize, you know what? This may be beneficial to the rest of the family.
Talk about a case that you found particularly interesting that you've engaged with, obviously not sharing identifying details, but one that you think is illustrative of some of the benefits, and maybe one that was more challenging, that it was an example of where family therapy wasn't a great match for a particular situation.
One that I think is successful that comes to mind is a teenager that was dealing with depression and anxiety. And the parents really felt like they wanted to come into therapy and deal with his problem. You know, he's the one who's depressed. He's the one who's anxious. And in family therapy, we discovered that the parents had all these unrealistic expectations on this child. And that was creating all this, you know, anxiety and depression. And that was really kind of an aha moment for them, because they really thought it was his problem and that he didn't know how to cope with his emotions. When they were able to step back and realize they were putting a lot of undue pressure on this young man, they were able to look back and work together and set some realistic goals and expectations for their child. This in turn, you know, led to less anxiety, less depression, more happiness, more, you know, harmonious home. And the parents were really surprised that they were actually part of the problem. And, you know, that's really what systems therapy is about, is, you know, looking at the family as a whole.
So that's an interesting case that you described. I'm imagining that the family had reasons for these unrealistic expectations. What was the process by which they came to the conclusion? I mean, I've seen families when somebody comes in, even tearful children, saying, gosh, I'm not going to be what you are, Dad. And parents having surprisingly, you know, fairly, maybe aggressive is the wrong word, but no, you just need to work harder. No, you just, if you tried, you could make it. What was the process by which this family recognized the unrealistic nature of their expectations?
So, you know, you bring up something really, really powerful. It's like, yeah, looking at where is that coming from? And in family therapy, we discovered that these were immigrant parents, that they wanted their child to not work as hard as they had. And there was a lot of cultural components in here too. And they wanted just, you know, for him to have a really, really good life. And the way that they saw to do that is through education, that if he went to college and got good grades, he could then earn a magnificent degree and then have a great job. And then they were able to see, oh my gosh, this is some of our own stuff. But then it also helped the child to realize that their parents were coming from a good place. You know, it was this just really wanting him to have a better life. So it's all those like aha moments that I think are so wonderful and amazing. And that's why I'm a big proponent for family therapy, that we would have lost a lot of that had I only seen, you know, this young man for individual therapy.
I love that story. I love the idea that by his parents sort of coming to the place of, hey, we're putting too much on him or her. We're recognizing this is our own views, or we're projecting our dreams. This is actually creating a negative cycle. And the child saying, gosh, it's not that they just are unrealistic or they're embarrassed by me. It's really that they want the best for me.
Right.
Can you give an example of like the opposite type of case, one that was more challenging, or perhaps, you know, got to a point where you needed to say, gosh, we need to take a break, or maybe we don't even start because of the dynamics?
So I think about a family who came in and they said they wanted to work on communication. And it was evident that there was something else at play, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it because they weren't talking about it. And so the first thing is to build rapport. So I thought, okay, you know, let's continue to build rapport and see if we can get this family to open up, because clearly there's a family secret here. And I also know, you know, I walk the walk and talk the talk, meaning I've also been in my own therapy. I've had my family. So I know how hard it is to, you know, talk about just challenges and struggles that individuals and families are facing. So we continued on with more rapport, and it still seemed like we weren't getting to the root of the issue. So at that point, I did feel like I had enough rapport to talk to the family about the fact that I felt, I didn't want to use the word new, because I really did it, you know, I didn't have concrete evidence that there was something else at play, that it looked to me like there was something else at play. And based on my professional opinion and working with parents, that there was, and families, that there was something they weren't telling me. And if we are not talking about the root of the problem, then we're not going to find a successful solution. And, you know, unfortunately, in this case, the family came back and said, you know, I don't think we're ready for family therapy. And I wasn't going to push. I said, when you're ready, come back. You know, there are other things that you can work on, but it sounds to me, it looks to me like this is what everybody needs to be talking about. That secret that you're all holding is the key, because as you came in with everybody saying, you know, there was all this stress and addiction, there was all this other stuff going on. But I think that would have opened up just a lot of things that they weren't ready to deal with. So sometimes it's planting seeds, right? Sometimes it's knowing that this is what they need to work on, you know, with the hope that eventually they will get there.
I love that. I think sometimes it's interesting. It's so easy for us to kind of put everything else in the room than the one thing that we kind of know either subconsciously or consciously is driving negative behaviors.
Right.
What benefits have you seen overall from using family therapy?
There are lots. There can be improved communication, more empathy and understanding for the other individuals in the family, like that example that I talked about with that young man and, you know, all of his anxiety and depression. And, you know, that also, then you also see a decrease in symptoms and better behavior. You also just see, you know, more of a supportive environment, which I think is just so fantastic. I think it's also really important for folks to recognize, especially parents, what anxiety and what depression looks like in children and in adults, as well as teenagers, so that they can kind of when they're reflecting on what's happening with me or what's happening with my child, realize that there's something at play. So with young kids, it tends to be physical ailments like headaches, stomach aches, clinginess. With teenagers, depression tends to manifest itself with more irritability, anger, being withdrawn. In adults, anxiety can be excessive worry. It can be feeling sweaty. It can be, you know, you feel like your heart is pounding. Or depression can look like not wanting to get out of bed, being tired all the time. So if you are experiencing these symptoms or you're noticing that something's off with your child, something can be at play. And, you know, for me, I always think that communication's first, even before calling a therapist, like what's at play? Just calling it out, you know, gosh, I noticed that you're having a lot of headaches lately. You know, I wonder with the wondering questions, not like, I think this is it. You know, what do you think is happening? Where I wonder what's at play, being curious, being, you know, opening with curiosity and then seeing what comes out of that.
I know you're committed to serving underserved populations and making sure there's equal access to mental health, which I think is such a noble mission in a prior life before intent. I ran a home for foster care kids, and talk about a population that, gosh, needed a lot of help, both themselves and their family systems. If one of the things that struck me running that home was that sometimes it felt like we were playing almost whack-a-mole with all the different issues at play. You would have trauma, you would have substance use, you'd have abandonment issues, you would have one of them would impregnate a girlfriend. You know, the list of criminal charges, school failures, all the list. And so one of my questions is, when you think about that demographic, people that don't unfortunately have access, maybe even stable access to basic necessity, housing, food, all those things, oftentimes family therapy is indicated, but it almost seems like a nice to have, not a need to have, or something that's impossible to logistically organize. What has been your experience with families in that predicament, you know, where they're trying to basically survive every day, but at the same time, there's just a dire need based on the history of trauma or the way the relationships are manifesting themselves in the home for somebody to receive therapy?
Right. Okay. So a few things. And you're absolutely right. I think that is the toughest population to treat because, as you mentioned, there are multiple issues at play, and not just mental health issues, but real life issues that are also contributing, you know, to the problems. So, and that sometimes it's not easy to get everybody in because of all those problems. So with telehealth, now that's also one way that's for us, the silver lining with the pandemic is that we don't need everybody driving to the clinic anymore, that people can Zoom on. If everybody's at home, great. But, you know, if someone's at school or they're in the car, you know, we meet them where they are. That's fine. You can Zoom in and we can work with the people that we have. A lot of the time it is just working with individuals, not with families, unfortunately, because someone may be incarcerated, because dad has two jobs, because it's just not possible. And that's okay. Even working with one person, you know, it is still that systems perspective, believing that if that person changes their behavior or improves their daily functioning or their symptoms get better, then the rest of the family system can also improve. And then in terms of, you know, what do you deal with first? I think that's, you know, one of the biggest challenges. And it really depends on a variety of things. What is kind of the easiest thing that we can tackle? What is the low-hanging fruit? What is it that, you know, the client wants to work on? And I think it's all of that that then determines, you know, in what order things get treated.
Absolutely. One other question I had was, when you think about serving that single person and then you bring in others into the fold, or even if everybody starts at the same time, I would imagine as the therapist, there's two things, at least in my mind, as the non-practicer, I'm not a practitioner. So two things come to mind that would be challenging. One would be not aligning subconsciously with one member of the story. And so how do you cope with that? And then the second question would be, how do you deal with it if you've got multiple family members and things get really tense and almost out of control, not necessarily physically, although it could be, but even just emotionally, where you're in a room of people that are really angry with each other? How as the practitioner can you facilitate positive change in those situations?
So it's really important to set ground rules. And that's one thing that I actually haven't mentioned. So I'm so glad that you brought that up, because things can get heated. You know, I talked about resentment. People are holding things in, or they really feel like one person's at fault for whatever's going on. And it's really important to have those ground rules at the beginning, such as, you know, there will be no physical violence in the therapy session. They're not even raising voices. You know, we're all respectful of one another. We're going to let one person talk at a time and ensure that everybody has a turn to speak. You know, and if one family member isn't speaking up, it's the therapist's job to ensure that we pull that and that we draw that member in by asking, you know, okay, we haven't heard from you, Johnny. We'd really like to know what you're thinking and what your thoughts are about all of this. So it is, you know, the therapist's job is one that's constantly facilitating, making sure that everybody has a chance to speak, also reading body language to make sure that no one's withdrawing or that no one is monopolizing the entire time. And then at the end of the session, it's also doing kind of a wrap up, not just what did we learn, but now when you get home and you're thinking about all of this again, how are we going to, and you want to talk about it with each other, which is fine. How are you going to do that in a respectful way? Because, you know, you're only in therapy for an hour, usually once a week. The work should continue with the family, you know, at home. How can I do that in a respectful, in an appropriate manner? And that's also something that needs to be discussed at the end of every session.
Makes total sense. And what do you do about the first part of the question around alignment? Like if you naturally, we all are human. We all have, I know therapists have transference issues. Somebody in the group either reminds you of someone you have a complicated relationship with in your own life, or something they says just really bothers you. How do you manage through that in a way that feels fair and gets the family to a better place?
Yeah. And so, when training to be a therapist, you actually have to earn 3,000 hours training under someone that's licensed before you can actually sit for your own licensure. And part of that training is, you know, what you talked about, countertransference, learning your own things, learning, you know, what triggers you so that you're not triggered when something up comes up. Also, the importance of being in your own therapy so that you've worked through your own issues. So again, you're not triggered. And also learning when you do have, you know, this positive, it doesn't have to be negative countertransference, but positive countertransference towards somebody, like you said, and wow, I really like, you know, mom. How are we going to make sure that I'm not just aligning with mom? And it is, you know, you do learn voice, tone, because people will be able to see if you're aligning with one over another. And I think that that also tends to happen where family members want you to align with them. You know, they want you to see their part, you know, their point of view more than others, or understand, you know, why they're right. And, you know, calling that out. Johnny, mom, I see that that you're really wanting me to see your point. And I do. But as your family therapist, it's really also important that I get to see your daughter's point, your husband's point, you know, and being very matter of fact.
I love that. When you think about family therapy, is it distinctive from couples therapy? Is it the same thing? Like, do you see couples as well? Or is it really just in family units implying children in the mix? Or at least that's how I interpret it.
Yeah. So, you know, it can be both. I have seen there does tend to be a distinction between family therapy and couples therapy. But I think that the only difference really is that there's two people, you know, as opposed to more than that with the family, because couples do come in for the same kind of reasons, you know, that they're feeling like their partner isn't listening, or their partner is depressed, or some couples just come in wanting to improve communication or wanting to figure out how they're going to be on the same page with child rearing, even, you know, before there's an issue.
So I watched, it's probably not realistic, but that show Couples Therapy, and I was entranced, even as somebody who has been in the behavioral health space for a long time. But it was just interesting to see what issues were brought forward, which couples got stuck, which couples seemed to make progress. Do you have a sense as when a couple starts the process, or as a family starts the process, gosh, I think there's a I think we will make real progress here, or there are situations, I'm thinking particularly with couples, because it seems oftentimes like people are coming in when they're considering a separation or when they're separated and they're considering divorce. Are there situations that you can just tell almost immediately from the dynamic, gosh, this doesn't have a lot of hope for success?
I try not to, because then that's my own counter transference is at play. And then I wonder if my interventions are because of, you know, now what I have in my head. So my way of working is, if they come in and they say they want their relationship to work, then okay, our goals are going to be for your relationship to work. And obviously to concretize those, that goal, right? That's a really broad goal. What is that going to look like if your relationship works? And then going from there.
What do you do when goals are in misalignment? One party thinks they need to leave the marriage, the other wants to stay. One thinks they're too hard on the kids, the other one thinks they're too soft. And how, you know, is there a process by which you bring people closer together? Is that the goal? Or is the goal to discover that there is no resolution? Like, how do you deal with that when people are really on opposite pages coming into the process?
So I've seen it all. I've seen where they have been on completely different pages. And then I ask, okay, well, then we have two different goals here that are not in alignment. What are we, how is this going to work? This doesn't work. So what is going to be a mutual goal that you two can agree upon? Because we can't work with two conflicting goals. So I've seen where families or couples do decide to figure out a mutual goal that they can work on together. And I've seen where they just can't figure it out. And is this the right time for therapy?
So when somebody decides that it's time for their family to engage in family therapy, how do they find the right match?
Great question. So I really encourage folks to do some research and not just blanketly, you know, open the internet and find the first person that pops up. I would encourage folks to call at least three people so that you can learn their style. You can learn, how they work. Are they willing to work with just one person, or does the entire family have to be there? What about fee? Do they take your insurance? Do they have private pay? What does the therapy look like? Traditional therapy is one time a week. However, some may want you to come in more times, you know, than that, or others say less. So it's really important to do some research. Also, making sure that your therapist does have education and training on family therapy, because it is very, very different from individual therapy. You know, for some of the reasons that we talked about in terms of alignment, in terms of ensuring that the therapist can draw in all of the different family members, and also not get stuck or, not align with one over the other. Because once that happens, you know, it can get messy. So I would say research is key.
I love ending on a hopeful note, because these issues are always tough. So Eden, what gives you hope?
Well, I have to tell you that family therapy really gives me hope. And I hope that that doesn't sound hokey, because I really do believe in the process. I really do believe that systems can change, that it is, you know, that the system is very, very powerful. And that if families are invested, that change can occur.
Thank you, Eden, today for joining us on Conversations with Intent. And thank you to all our listeners and our viewers. If you are so inclined, please give us a positive rating on your podcast platform of choice. We are on all of them. Please also feel free to send in thoughts, comments, suggestions for future topics or guests to conversations@intentclinical.com. Thank you, and we'll see you on the next episode.